Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, Bald Eagle Watching Days are coming up, and we'll be talking about this year's event and how eagles are doing in the state with our guests. I'm Larry Mueller again, and our guests today, Jeb and Barb Barzin. Jeb, wildlife biologist who worked at the International Crane Foundation for more than 28 years. He works in developing economic drivers that help people implement conservation that is ecologically meaningful. Jeb, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Barb Barzin with us as well. Barb, good to see you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
She's worked in Wisconsin's conservation community for 30 years. She does a lot of fundraising and program developments, currently working for the Driftless Area Land Conservancy based in Dodgeville. So fun to have them here, and we'll be talking about eagles and about this year's event, and of course, we'll talk about bald eagles. And Dave Potratz, our engineer today. Dave, have you got a song sound for us? No. Is it true? Jeb, is that an eagle?
That is an eagle, followed up by a red-tailed hawk. And the story behind that is most movies that you see will show a beautiful eagle soaring, and they'll play that call, which is red-tailed hawk, because that sounds eagle majestic, but not the chortle of a real bald eagle.
And a real bald eagle sounds like, well, not like that. Let's hear that real bald eagle again. It almost sounds like a songbird, doesn't it?
Basically, I think most people believe that it doesn't sound like a bald eagle, and that's what they're willing to bet on, but it is indeed.
Well, it's great to have you along to talk about bald eagles. The statewide status of eagles is looking pretty good. There's some good results. Were there not, Barb, from the survey?
Yeah, right. The results of the 2018 survey just came out, and just shy of 1,700 nests statewide, so which is really impressive.
Yeah, that's a record, is it not?
I mean, it is. Yep, from the time 105 more nests than what they found in 2017. So still a pretty, even when you think the inn is full in this state, the eagles are increasing like crazy. And the highest concentration is up in Oneida and Vilas County, where there were 326 nests last summer, which is one of the highest concentrations of nesting bald eagles in all of North America. But the biggest increase, you know, they have the state divided up into survey sections, and the biggest increase was actually in the Southwest.
Interesting.
Yeah, 30% increase of number of nests in the Southwest region over 2017.
You know, it's kind of fun that everything, of course, Barb is saying is accurate and true. I would never change anything that Barb would say. One of the things that's interesting is thinking about concentrations. So Oneida and Vilas County do have the highest concentrations of eagles in those counties. But if you actually look at nesting density of bald eagles, mm-hmm. which is kind of the number of nests that you can find per unit area, in Crawford and Grant County on the Mississippi River directly, you can actually have the highest density of nests anywhere known, which is much higher than what you see in Oneida or Vilas counties, because the nests are packed in fairly tightly. Even though the birds are territorial, it's presumed that they have a high enough food density that they can provision their youngs, and so their territories don't need to be as large. And you can actually have a very high density of nests that are on that Mississippi River that you don't find in Oneida or Vilas County in terms of actual density.
That's really interesting. And it's, yeah, Barbie.
Just as an example, we help to lead a spring migration field trip on the Mississippi River every year. And last couple years, we've stood in New Albany, Iowa, and looked out and seen three eagle nests, each with incubating eagles, and they're all looking at each other. we saw that and thought, oh my goodness, we've never seen that before. And so the retired manager of the Upper Mississippi National Wildlife Refuge was with us, and he said, that when he had retired 3 years prior to that, there were 75 eagle nests in the 8 mile stretch of Mississippi River just south of La Crosse. 75 nests.
That is absolutely amazing. Yeah. Well, I guess you think about it, if there's food, why can't we live a little closer together if we're eagles?
Well, the biology, if you're a biology nerd, the biology of it is that territories are based on the resources that are needed often to provision young. And so it really is based on food. And an eagle won't defend a territory that's larger than what it can economically do. And so if you've got a lot of eagles wanting nests, you aren't going to have as big of a territory. And so as our population grows, these territories, at least where food allows it, are getting smaller and smaller. And so what's really fun, if you go back to what you started the program with, is that our eagle population is increasing in Wisconsin, and we don't really know to what point. You know, it's
increasing. How far can we go?
Right. And how far we can go. I mean, you just take Vilas and Oneida County. We thought that was the best of eagle nesting habitat anywhere in Wisconsin way back when we first started doing surveys in the 70s. And no one would have thought of looking at the Mississippi River as actually having a higher nesting density than those counties in northern Wisconsin. So it's we're learning all sorts of things as population recovery continues with bald eagles and with other species that are doing quite well as well.
How we know that over time eagles go back to the same nest or use the same nest, if I'm not mistaken, over time, and they get to be pretty darn big, 1,000 pounds or more.
The nest.
Yeah, not the eagles, the nest. But I'm wondering how long does it take, or how much, what size nest do they need to, you know, the first time round? You know what I mean? To establish a nest that's big enough to support.
I don't know how you would describe that. I don't know. People usually say they're about 8 feet in diameter. Yeah. And they start actually building their nests in the fall, oftentimes, either building or refurbishing their nests in the fall. And through the Decorah Eagle nest cam, they have discovered that pair at least adds about 200 pounds of sticks to their nest every year.
So I think one of the things that's important to understand is that it's not that an eagle needs a nest that's a ton in size.
Right.
But you start with eagles who are territorial. And as you say, they come back to their territory each year, so they're highly philopatric. And so their initial nest might be all that they really need. But once they add that layer, if they go back and use the same nest bowl without adding to it, they have a higher parasite load that can be in that nest and that sort of thing. And so the birds are adding to that nest in order to maintain the health of their young. They're wanting to be in the same place, and if it worked last year, it should work this year. And so they just keep adding to it. Plus, they're long-lived birds, and so they can be adding to it over decades, we think.
Yeah.
And so you ultimately get this really big nest, but it's not because they need a big nest necessarily, but it's more of an outcome of the other biological facts that these eagles respond to.
That's really interesting. We're talking today with Barb and Jeb Barzin. It's great to have them with us to talk about eagles and talk about eagle watching days, which we haven't even gotten into yet. We will. You have a question about eagles, I hope you'll join in, or maybe eagle watching days, give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Well, this year's Bald Eagle Watching Days is coming up. It's coming up really quick, actually, January 18th and 19th, so 9 days away.
Yeah, it's our 32nd annual.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And what can people expect? Give us the background of why there and where is it located and why is it located there and what?
Oh, at the event, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Sauk Prairie has the second largest concentration of wintering bald eagles in the state, or in the Midwest, actually. So So, you know, 32 years ago, the DNR decided to use that as an educational opportunity, and it's grown and grown from started out in the firehouse restaurant with a couple of spotting scopes, and it's changed and grown from there. And so, like 15, 20 years ago, the Sauk Prairie community got together and built the River Arts Center, which is a performing arts center and community space. And so once that was there, we've moved the event there, and it's been worked out just beautifully. So most of the events are at the River Arts Center, which is an add-on to the Sauk Prairie High School. But then we also have things going on in downtown Prairie du Sac, and we've got our eagle watching overlook off the public parking lot in Prairie du Sac. We've got spotting scopes set up there and volunteer station there. We'll be doing an eagle release late last week. We learned from Marge Gibson that she will be coming down to release a big, beautiful adult and a couple of immature eagles from the VFW park at 1 o'clock on Saturday.
That's going to be really great.
Yep, yep.
And so, one of the things I like about, you don't have to drive around the look for parking and all that to get from one place to the other, because you've got, for example, there have been buses or ways to transport people to viewing stations and so forth.
Exactly, yeah. Part of the program is eagle watching tours. So every 30 minutes from 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock on the 19th, we will be leading eagle watching tours. They're on school buses. The purpose of that is to not only relay a lot of information about eagles, but also to show people where the three hot spots for watching eagles are in the community, so that if they want to come back on their own, they know where to go. So we take them to the what we call the overlook at the parking lot, and then up to the dam, which is where the most active eagle feeding goes on usually, and then down to the VFW park, and then back to the school. So it's a 50-minute, on eagle watching days, it's a 50-minute tour,
and it fits
beautifully with the rest of the schedule.
Yeah, so. And I having done that, I'm telling you, it is really an inspiring and fun experience.
Good.
I think, and I'm certainly hoping. Well, you always get a pretty good turnout, don't you?
Oh, we get a great turnout, especially for the Eagle release. Which, speaking of buses, which you started this question with. The eagle release happens again down at the VFW park, and it can get very congested. When we did this two winters ago, we counted what we thought was about 2,000 people. So
yeah.
We have all kinds of parking attendants down there to make sure that parking happens in an orderly way, but there's only one way in and out of the area. So if people want to go to the release but don't want to deal with the congested parking, and we encourage people to park in the streets near there instead of down in the parking area, and B, we have the capacity, we have two buses that each can hold 50 people. So if you want to park at the River Arts Center and then take the bus down to the Eagle release, that's a great way to get down there.
Yeah.
We're going to have food down there. And I also want to mention that everything for that event is free of charge.
Excellent.
We have very generous sponsors with Alliant Energy and a long list of local community businesses and organizations that support this. So we offer this all free of charge.
Well, there are lots of people who want to talk with you too, and we'll get to that in just a second. Wayne, Patricia, Larry, and John all want to talk to you, and there are probably a whole lot more as well. But first, I want to remind you that our two guests today, Barb and Jeb Barzin, great to have them with us to talk about Eagle Watching Days. Dave Potratz, our engineer. Jill Nadeau, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Talking Eagles and Eagle Watching Days today with our two guests, Barb and Jeb Barzin. I'm Larry Mueller. And lots of callers online. We'll get to that in just a second. But Barb, I know you wanted to make a comment on the releases.
Yeah, yeah. So Marge Gibson runs the Raptor Education Group up in Antigo. And so she likes to release her rehabilitated birds down in our area so they can get, they kind of intermingle with the adult birds here and kind of get with the program. before they head back north. So this coming Saturday, she will be releasing three immature eagles at the VFW park just through, at 1 o'clock at the VFW park this coming Saturday. And that's just a Raptor Education Group event that our group has nothing to do with. Mm-hmm. But she has posted that on her Facebook page. So wanted to.
That's on the 12th then.
That's on the 12th, yes. Mm-hmm. And then on the 19th, as part of our Bald Eagle Watching Days event, she will also be releasing three birds, one big, beautiful adult, and then two immatures. And that will happen, again, at 1 o'clock at the VFW park.
On the 19th.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So good to get that straight.
Yeah,
two great opportunities. Well, let's turn to Wayne in Green Bay. Wayne, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning, and thanks for having me on the air. I was an inmate at Winnebago Correctional Facility, unfortunately, for about 6 months, a few years back. And I used to watch the lake a lot and watch all the birds. And right in Winnebago, right out of Oshkosh, or right in Oshkosh there, there's an eagle's nest right on the lake. And I used to watch the eagles come out, and when they come off the nest, fly out, when all the divers, ducks that come down, they'd all pick up at the same time, you know, 10,000 ducks, the entire bay would pick up when an eagle would fly over, and when he passed, then they'd land again. And I always thought that was intriguing, and I figured they were hunting them or whatever, and so they'd boogie. Well, now I live in Green Bay, and I'm all along the Fox River and right in by the old Fort Howard paper company and that, and there's several eagles that work that area. And when the diver ducks were up in the Fox River there for a while, they did not get up when the eagles would fly over, and sometimes the eagles are even on the ice, and there's birds not too far away, but they don't fly. And I was just curious why that might be.
Oh, interesting. Jeb, what do you think?
Well, there's a couple things that you might be seeing going on. Probably the most important thing is that eagles are good predators, but they're also smart predators, in that they are very careful about who they try to attack for food, because they don't want to waste a lot of energy, and they also don't want to get injured. And so oftentimes they'll know a lot about the individuals that are hanging out near them, and they know if they're, for the most part, healthy mm-hmm. or not. And if they're not healthy, they'll just keep going after and after and after those birds in an attempt to capture them. But if they're healthy, it's just better for them to leave them alone. So you might just be seeing a difference between birds that were familiar with the eagles that were in that area versus birds that were not familiar with eagles in the area, and their reactions can be completely different. And if you've ever hunted or done that sort of thing, birds and other animals know very well when something's looking at them versus yeah. something that's ignoring them. And so you get a lot of that interaction. But also diving ducks respond to eagles very differently than do puddle ducks. And puddle ducks will tend to take off and fly more than will diving ducks, because diving ducks can better escape.
They can dive.
They can go under the water. And so that's also a different thing that could have been happening there too, because you sort of, in your description, you were implying that in one case you were seeing diving ducks, and in another case you might have been seeing what we would call puddle ducks, which would be mallards or things like that.
Very interesting. Thanks again, Wayne. Appreciate it very much. Patricia in Madison, your turn. Hi, Patricia.
Hi there, Larry and guests. Excuse me. Are there any eagle camps set up? I think there had been one in Iowa, and wondering if they have any set up this year.
Cams, cameras, what about it?
Yeah, we don't have any in our immediate area, but the rock stars of the eagle world are the Dakora eagles. PBS did a documentary called American Eagle on that nest. It's been 10, 15 years ago now. Just amazing footage that they got. And that kind of started the whole eagle cam revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're everywhere. I think if you just Google eagle cam, you'll come up with quite a long list of eagle eagle nest cams. I know Eagle Valley Reserve has one, at least. Yeah, they're all, especially along the Mississippi, a lot of those, not a lot, but a good handful of nests have eagle cams on them. But the Decora nest really kind of sets the gold standard. They have quite a setup there, and they have a lot of educational materials that go along with it. They've got maps. Just had correspondence this morning with Brett Mandernack at Eagle Valley. He is coming up with a report kind of on all the young eagles that they have tagged with satellite transmitters from that nest, and so that's going to be coming out sometime soon. So they get a lot of information from that nest, both behaviorally, just by watching the camera, and then they put transmitters, the satellite transmitters, on all the eaglets in that nest, and so they track the migration. So I would start there, but yeah, Google Nest Cam, and you'll get a long list.
And if you put Nest Cam Decora, Iowa, probably that'll pop up first,
right,
and that
sounds
like a good place to start.
Yeah, I mean that they've crashed the internet with that. It's so popular.
Yeah.
They you look on it and you can see how many people are watching at the same time. There are a lot of teachers actually that have it going all day in their classroom, so the kids can watch what the eagles are doing. So it's really cool.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
Patricia, thank you so much for calling. Paul sent a nice photo, by the way. Thanks for sending that, Paul, of an eagle. It looks like there was some snow on the ground, and that eagle looks majestic, as they always do. Oh, maybe it's not up in front of your... It may not be on your screen yet. I'm sorry. We'll get that fixed so you can see that as well. In the meantime, you can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments, and send your eagle photos or your questions as well. You can email those to us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you.
Larry, there's some interesting things with the picture. It's hard to tell for sure, but the bird is either just about ready to take off, which is possible with a photograph that's that close, but it also could be exhibiting what's called mantling behavior, which is a typical way of a bird making itself look bigger, and it's often seen when it's defending its food that it's capturing. And the other interesting thing about it is it's a female. It's an adult female. And so she's a really big bird, and it's very interested in keeping its food to itself.
It sure looks that way. Ron in Cable, it's your turn. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
My wife and I live on this wild lake just northeast of Cable, Wisconsin, and we often ski around the lake during the winter. And this past winter encountered... extraordinarily large number of eagles. We have a nesting pair on the lake and may at times see three or four total, but this time skied around the corner into this little bay and the treetops just erupted with eagles. I lost count at 23. And have never been able to get an explanation what was going on. I did some of the obvious research. There was no, you know, deer carcass. There was one very tiny pool of open water, and I did see a little motion in that pool, but it was probably only, say, 20 feet in diameter. We are about a half mile north of the Namekagon River, which is generally open water, but anybody have spoken with our local naturalist at the museum, and everyone is just baffled by this encounter.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, Jeb, if you got a 20, fairly large open water spot, or not too large, maybe would that be a reason why you'd get a lot of them congregating, because there's where the food is?
Well, certainly the rule of thumb is eagles will congregate where food is congregated, basically. But in this particular case, what would cause food to be concentrated in that area? Were you finding that area kind of towards spring, like maybe March?
It was late winter and into March, and this is something we encountered on more than one occasion. We have a neighbor that has a different view up the lake than we do, and his spotting scope, and one day called and said, there were 16 eagles just sitting out on the lake. So,
one of the things, is there an outlet near that area of open water?
There is not, no. And it was really quite a small pool of water, like, you know, not even the size of my living room.
Well, it doesn't have to be a big pool of water, and it could be even a spring. the reason why I'm asking is that oftentimes what we see, say, on Lake Wisconsin and down here in the southern part of Wisconsin, is we'll see eagles in the springtime concentrate where probably where the fish have died but accumulated, and either at an outlet for an outlet for a river, or an area where a spring is, because you have oxygenated water, and so fish will congregate there. But if they still have winter kill, they'll stay there under the ice. But in the springtime, when that pool of water opens up, you might have a lot of dead fish that have concentrated in that area, and that would be the concentrated food source that would allow that would attract larger numbers of eagles. And in migration, you've got a lot of birds that are moving through that area, and they'll say, "Oh, there's some food," and take advantage of it. And that might be an explanation of what you saw. But invariably, when you've got that many eagles that are concentrated in an area, it's not during the breeding season, or they wouldn't concentrate. And it's there's got to be food that's attracting them.
Yeah, very interesting. Ron, thanks very much. Appreciate your call. And let's go to John in Shawamigan Bay. Hi, John.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to share an experience with you about 11 years ago. Someone gave me, at deer season, the remains of butchering a couple of deer that they had been able to bag. And I live on an old family farm and have a 3-acre open field behind the house that's surrounded by forest on three sides, and then by the house and century-old trees on the west side. And I had an eagle coming in every day for about a month, I guess, until everything got cleaned up. And then we were able to do it again the next year, and that year it was a pair of eagles. And it was very interesting because this is a field that is sort of shaped, amphitheatered away from the house.
Oh.
And the house would be the staging area. And I guess because we have such mature trees between the house and this field, the eagles would fly the circumference of the field once, just below forest level, before they landed. And they seemed to do the same thing when they took off. And I wondered if that was just because of the setting. And, you know, that second year, it was a pair that came 11 o'clock every day, 11 a.m. Set the clock by them.
Interesting. So they're creatures of habit a little bit, Jeb?
Oh, yeah. They're very much creatures of habit. Perhaps I missed it, and I'm sorry if I did. How big was the field that they were coming into?
It's a little over 3 acres.
Okay.
So it's for an eagle, it's a relatively small space to go into, and they're very careful about going to a place where they're going to be on the ground. They like to see a long ways around them, and they're not great flyers when it comes to taking off or landing. They need a lot of space in order to do both, and that can explain the circling of the field, either to when they take off to be able to gain altitude and not fly into the trees, or when they're landing to check out the field and to slowly lose altitude as they're coming in. And so that can explain that. But I think maybe and a really important part of your message is that it's, you know, it's great that you're concerned and feeding the birds with deer carcasses. It's a wonderful thing to do, and it sounds like you've got parrots in the background, so I think you're interested in birds of all shapes. But one thing that I would really urge caution to is that eagle or deer carcasses that are hunter shot, unless you know for sure that they were shot by hunters using lead-free ammunition, can be a real danger to the eagle. So that there's going to be, even if you don't think it's possible, there is quite likely lead that's scattered throughout that carcass. And by putting a carcass that's hunter shot out, eagles that are feeding on it are going to be exposed to that lead, and that's the leading cause of mortality of birds that are brought into either captivity or found dead. The leading cause of that death is lead poisoning, and much of that comes from hunter shot deer. So I would urge a lot of caution with what deer you put out there. If they're deer that are shot with non-lead ammunition, they're perfectly fine for eagles, and it's a great thing to do. But if they are deer that are shot with lead ammunition, no matter how careful you are, there's likely lead in that carcass, and eagles feeding on that carcass will be exposed to that lead, and it's highly toxic to the birds. So I would urge, two different things. One is it's great to be concerned about the birds and putting food out for them, but you need to be really careful that that food is okay for the eagles.
And the other thing is, I guess, pointing out to deer hunters, because the proper shells, non-lead shells, are readily available for hunters, deer hunters.
For most calibers are readily available. Yeah. 30-06, for example, yeah, is very readily available. 30-30, not so readily available, but you can get it if you think ahead. And in fact, Fairy Bluff Eagle Council has been working with our local vendors in the Sauk Prairie area to provide funds to discount the non-lead ammunition so that it's about on par as far as price goes, because the biggest drawback of the non-lead ammunition is that it's more expensive. The ballistics of it are very similar. They're very good. I think they actually work better than do lead ammunition. But basically, we're doing what we can to try and get more hunters to try out non-lead ammunition, because they find they like it once they use it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, John, thank you so much. Barb, I want to go back to you, because I wanted to talk a little more about the schedule of events and activities that are going to be going on at Eagle Watching Days on the 18th and 19th. The 18th, actually, there's one event
just
in the
evening
at 7 o'clock, isn't it not?
Yeah. Our friend David Stokes will be coming back. And if you've never seen a David Stokes program, it is it's memorable. Yeah. He has a wonderful energy, great information. He gets even the adults up and dancing, you know. So especially for people who are coming from out of town, and for our local audience, at 7 o'clock at the River Arts Center, David Stokes will be presenting his program, Laughing with the Animals. And he puts snakes on his head, and
he does a lot of wild things, it's always fun.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and so starting bright and early the next morning at 8 o'clock, we will have volunteers out at our eagle viewing overlook to help people spot eagles. They'll be there all day until sun up to sundown. Events at the school, just some highlights. Excuse me, the Kiwanis will be serving a pancake breakfast all morning. The eagle watching tours, again, will leave every half hour. Kids' activities, we've got both DNR and Fairy Bluff Eagle Council there to do face painting and a lot of different kids' activities. Our friend Lisa Hartman will be there with her vulture Uncle Bootsy again. He's star of the show. Live Birds of Prey shows, Slitz Audubon Nature Center is coming again. They've come for several years now, and they do a wonderful job. And their programs will be at 10 o'clock in the morning, and then again at 2:30 in the afternoon in the River Arts Center Auditorium. That's a free event, but people need to get a ticket just to reserve their spot. And you can get tickets at anywhere in the River Arts Center, and I think we'll also have them at the Overlook, too. And then David is on again at 11:30 with his Laughing with the Animals, and then the place usually empties out during the eagle release, which again is at 1 o'clock, and then come back again to the school at 2:30 for a program. There are other things going on around town. The Wallerstein Winery has their annual Eagle White wine tasting. We've got two programs going on at the library that's in Prairie du Sac, Civil War. It's the Tripp Memorial Library, I should say, not the public library. There's a great program on Old Abe, who was the 50-year-old eagle that was the mascot during the Civil War. And then Art Shigoni will be back, and he's a Native American who does a wonderful job talking about eagles and importance of eagles to Native American culture.
So lots going on.
Yeah, it's a nice
what a
variety.
What
so
a
people
way to
keep
spend...
coming back year yeah. after year because we do offer a lot.
And it's free.
And it's free.
Well, except for the Kiwanis breakfast. I don't think they would appreciate it if they were giving their food out for free. But other than that, it's free.
Yeah, and that's a good breakfast, too. That's worth the money for sure.
Yeah.
Linda in Nashville, Tennessee has something for us. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I live in an area that we have bald eagles, and they're rare, but I've seen a few. Recently, I saw a very, very large dark bird sitting in a tree, and it had the white, the broad white fan tail.
Yep.
Or why? But it didn't have the white head. And when I walked out of the house, I didn't know it was there, and I was making noise, and it flew away. I've looked at all the different birds that we have in our area. And I was wondering about the coloration of the feathers over time as birds move from being juveniles into adults. And I wondered if I might have caught a glimpse of a juvenile that was in a transition.
Yeah. Well, what do you think?
I think you've done pretty good sleuthing work there. The eagles do, they're typically predominantly brown when they're just out of the nest, and they've got that beautiful white head and white tail when they're adults at about 5 years of age. And in between, there's a variety of plumages that you can see. A bird who's 3 to 4 years old can often have a lot of white in its tail, but often a little bit of brown at the tip of the tail feathers, but they're white. And if you see them quickly, you'll see mostly white. And at that time, it's possible that they still have not much white in their heads, and they'll often have a black eye mask. And that's typically a bird who's 3 or 4 years old. It's possible, my wife is suggesting that it could be an immature golden eagle, and that's a possibility. If it's an immature golden eagle, a bird that's in its first year, it will have white on its tail, but the tail bands, there'll be two, and they'll be very dark. And there's a distinct difference between the dark part of the tail band and the white part of the tail band. Whereas with a 3 or 4 year old bald eagle, that white grading into a dark tail band is not so distinct, and there's usually only one band on it that's dark, not two. And so both of those could be a possibility, but I would guess, especially in Tennessee, that you're more likely to have seen a 3 or 4 year old bald eagle than a golden eagle.
Yeah. Thanks, Linda, very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Linda, if you were in this area in about another week, on the 18th and 19th, you'd have a chance to see immature bald eagles, probably, and fully adult bald eagles, and have a chance to participate in a lot of great activities at the Eagle Watching Days, Prairie du Sac and Sauk City. And one final comment from you, Barb.
Oh, sorry, are we out of time? Oh, yeah. Shoot. Okay. Well, if I have one final comment, then I want to push our Saturday tours. Because every Saturday at 10 o'clock, we have the same an hour-long eagle watching tour that leaves from the Cedarberry Inn in Sauk City. And so if you don't like crowds, but you still want to do an eagle watching tour, come any Saturday during the winter, but between now and mid-February.
Well, thank you both very much for being with us today. It was a lot of fun. And actually, it's going to be fun to continue talking about raptors. Eagles may come up again, but other raptors as well. But in the meantime, a big thanks to Jeb Barzin, wildlife biologist, and Barb Barzin, who's worked in Wisconsin's conservation community for a long, long time. They've been wonderful supporters of eagles. And it's a pleasure to have them on to talk about those amazing, amazing birds. But we're going to expand. Coming up next, we're talking Midwest raptors of all kinds with Joanne Joanna Eccles. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network.